One of the variants that they tried was the XC-47C. It was a float plane designed to operate in the Far East. They only used a few of these. They needed very, very still water to land on, and that wasn't practical. Slide. This is a color photo of one that at least it existed in 1995 when I took this down in Lakeland, Florida. A slide. There are two stories of DC-3 pilots earning Japanese kills. This is one example of where a kamikaze pilot tried to ram the C-47, slide, and he went down, but the C-47 landed with extensive damage, as you can see. This is the Berlin airlift. When the Russians shut down the access corridors to Berlin, the city was either going to starve or it was going to become communist Berlin. C-47s initially started the sky train of supplies and coal and food to the Berliners at 1948, June 1948 started. Not long after that, C-47s came into the picture also. And there was one story of one flying 8,000 pound loads when that's high above what they should have been. There's one story, you can believe it or not, I tend to question it, but it probably was true. There was an error in an invoice and it carried 13.5 thousand pounds of material, the iron planking for the runways. And next slide. This is a C-41 that was on the field earlier this week. There are at least 53 variants of the C-47/DC-3. This is one of them. Next slide. Around 1949, when there were other airplanes coming in and the airlines were looking for newer and faster equipment, Douglas decided to take the DC-3, modify it, and call it a Super DC-3. And you can see that the engine cowling is fatter, the wing is squarer, the tail assembly is not the tail assembly you'd recognize on a DC-3. The airlines weren't interested. One airline bought a couple, but they weren't happy with it, so they gave it back to Douglas in exchange for what they paid for it, I guess. And the Navy picked up the 101 or so Super DC-3s, and one of the problems that historians have had over the years is how many DC-3s were there? And if you count construction numbers, the information I found at the when Douglas was in Long Beach, there were 10,602 and 32 airplanes manufactured. Three of those were spares, and the Super DC-3 were given new construction numbers, so some of the historians counted them as new airplanes, but they really weren't. Next slide. Now, you know the DC-3 has taken a lot of punishment over the years. This is a South African Air Force C-47 that had just been hit with a Stinger missile. Most of the rudder is gone, part of the vertical stabilizer is gone, and most of the ailerons, which I just had a brain dump here. Elevator, thank you. I've been out in the sun too long, actually. This actually landed safely with no injuries to the crew. Next slide. The DC-3 was a result of a three-engine airplane crashing. Well, people decided to put a third engine on the DC-3, and it introduced the same factors that the Ford Trimotor and the Fokker had. It introduced more vibration into the airframe and more fumes into the cockpit. And there was only one made, configured like that, and it's right now, someday will probably be a Basel turbo conversion. Thank you very much, folks. I'd like Ron to introduce Mr. Douglas now.
Thank you very much. And let's give Henry a big round, please. Okay, next we have Mr. James Douglas. Jim is the son of Donald Douglas, founder of the Douglas Aircraft Company, and he's going to share some history with concerning his father and the company. Jim?
Well, I decided to give you the whole DC-3 story, so we'll start in the beginning. Slide one. My father, Donald Douglas, was born in Brooklyn, New York. What on earth is that? That's one of mine. My slides are titled "The Plane That Changed the World." So, and I believe the DC-3 really did change the world. Dad was born in Brooklyn, New York. His father was a banker, and they lived in what then was an upscale neighborhood. First slide. Do we have a slide? No? Guess not. But we'll talk without them. That's not mine either. Nice looking DC-3s. But anyway, they were in a brownstone, which is an upscale neighborhood, not anymore. But I actually had a slide in here somewhere of Dad's first. What happened to the slides? I brought them in 4 days ago. No? Yes? Hello? None? Okay, well, we'll talk without them then. So anyway, I better get behind here then. There we go. Yay! That's a flagship airplane by American. And by the way, if you look at the aircraft, you see a flag flying. They actually put a little holder on the outside of the airplane, and it was the co-pilot's responsibility to slide the thing back and stick the flag in so when the plane taxied up, it was a flagship airplane. Okay, next slide. This is a chronology I have. This is, by the way, in position of Jane. This lays out all the things from the time the dad was born to the Wright brothers' flight up to basically today. If you look at the chronology, you notice that the 1933 era was really the era of, that really launched airplane. Not only was Juan Tripp involved, I mean not Tripp, but Jack Fry. Tripp came in very shortly thereafter, but also C.R. Smith joined American Airlines. Next slide. This is a picture of Dad and his older brother Harold. Dad's the short one in the foreground, and his mother, Dorothy, and my grandfather, William. Next slide. By the way, unfortunately, Harold would have been a great asset to the Douglas Company, but he was lost in World War I. He got appendicitis on a destroyer. This is Dad's first airplane hanging from the roof of his bedroom. Next slide. This is a picture of the very, Dad is on the left, and the very austere gentleman with the high collar is Glenn L. Martin. And they are actually looking at the model of the Martin bomber that Dad designed in 1918. Next slide. And Dad, of course, being a transport man, he really liked to think about commercial transport. And this, of course, is the mock-up of the Martin bomber. It would carry six passengers, six on the inside, two abreast in wicker chairs, and one person got the bug smasher position. They actually left the gun tub up forward where they used to have a machine gun, and the guy would sit out in front and bite the bugs. Next slide. This is the first factory. Dad and mother and the kids were chased out of Cleveland, Ohio, simply because of what's called the influenza that racked the world. If you don't recall, those who are old enough, about 40 million people died year-round due to the flu. People were literally being stacked up in the street in Cleveland and other eastern cities. So they split to a country that had lots of room, cheap labor, available capital. It's called Southern California. That's gone away, but that was what it was called. This was actually the Cole Lumber Company. He bought Sitka spruce up in Alaska, and Sitka spruce has nice fine grains, and that's what they made the airplane. Old man Cole is no longer with us, but his son is running a large real estate development firm in Orange County. Next slide. This is upstairs from the shop downstairs. You know, it's the modern drafting equipment, you know, and the computer automation and all the rest that we normally had, of course, in those days. Better known as the slide rule and a pencil. Next slide. This is a picture of the first airplane. By the way, there was the Douglas Davis Company. It was formed in California with Dad and David R. Davis. Unfortunately, the plane was built to fly across the country nonstop. But somebody else got there first, so Mr. Davis took a hike and left the company to Dad. And this airplane you can see with Dad and Mother in Mother's arms is my baby sister, was the baby sister then, of course, with Barbara Jean, and on the wing is Donald, the taller of the two, and Brother William. Unfortunately, they're all gone. Now this airplane, since it no longer was flying, across the country nonstop. They put in 6 wicker seats on the inside, put in some windows, and it flew the world-famous Tijuana, Mexico to San Diego airline. Dad always suspected that the airline did not carry a whole lot of food, but of course that was the prohibition, so they probably carried a whole lot of booze. Anyway, that airplane is no longer with us, unfortunately, because they didn't have any landing strips in those days, and the airplane was parked on the beach. But the pilot was not much of a sailor, and so the tide came in, and that was the end of the airplane. By the way, the gentleman who bought the airplane to make this world-famous airline was a fellow by the name of T. Claude Ryan, who later on, of course, became famous with the Lindbergh airplane. Next. This is a picture of the Douglas World Cruisers at a place called Clover Field. That's where the original Douglas plant ended up. In the night, just before the DC-123 era, and this is the World Cruiser. It took them 5 months to fly around the world. They even got so hot when they're flying across the Indian subcontinent and across Persia, they actually wore pith helmets. Okay, next slide. This is really the first factory. This is before the DC era. This was on Wilshire Boulevard in Santa Monica. It was an ex-movie studio, and a fellow by the name of Charles Lindbergh. He did something. But anyway, after he picked up his airplane, and before he got to St. Louis, on before he got to New York to fly, he actually stopped and landed on Wilshire Boulevard and taxied in and had my father apprise the airplane and see what his chances were. Next slide. That's we want to call an airplane that helped get the DC-3 off the ground. That is the XB-9. That's what it was first built by Boeing for, to be a Army bomber. But Boeing did a lot better by selling it to their in-house airlines. In the original days, you not only make the airplane, but you also owned the airline. And Boeing owned United Airlines. There were a combination of four carriers, but they were put together as United. And the first 75 of these airplanes were destined for United Airlines. That also helped launch, next slide please. Oops, the DC, there we go. Coming on the letter from Jack Fry, when Dad got the letter, he said, "This is the birth certificate of the modern airliner." Next slide. And that is, of course, the modern airliner. That's the DC-2, which is a stretch from the DC-1. The prototype DC-1 had 2 abreast seating. It had 6 rows, we had 12 seating. By the time we got to the DC-2, we added an extra row. Douglas is always famous in stretching airplanes, and this airplane was our very first stretch. Next slide. This is a picture of Santa Monica facility. Now, if you look at old slides of Douglas aircraft and all the things we were building, if you look at the building and you see low, dark wooden ceilings, that's Santa Monica. If you see higher ceilings and middle post, that'll be Oklahoma City or Long Beach. Next slide. Those are DC-2s, by the way. This person made my sister really upset. Barbara's a good-looking woman, and she liked to do song and dance. But unfortunately, she was not Shirley Temple. And so Shirley Temple did the good ship Lollipop. As you can see, there's 2 abreast seating, so that, of course, would be inside a DC-2. Next slide. Again, the chronology. We've gone up through the Boeing 747. Now we'll go on. At the same year that Boeing was getting the 247 going, a young individual who was a banker, not a pilot like Jack Fry, but was a banker who looked towards profit from the airline, the name of C.R. Smith, joined the company. Next slide. And that is an early picture at the time that C.R. Smith got interested in the DC-2. What he was really interested in was a super DC-2. So they talked to the company about doing a stretch something, or maybe some more seats, or maybe some bunks, or some other things. So by the time we got to massaging the works, we came up with the next slide. There they are, the DST, the Douglas Sleeper Transport. You can see the upper windows. Typically on American Airlines thing. And this, of course, is the airplane, of course, that changed the world. Next slide. This is production at Santa Monica. People have asked me how we determine the aerodynamics. Well, Dr. Bailey Oswald, a graduate of California Institute of Technology from Pasadena, actually went up in our earlier DC airplane and actually ran performance tests. This had never been done before in the aviation. We burned up thousands of gallons of aviation gasoline in actually, you know, flying at 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 feet at different prop settings at different speeds to test exactly how you come up with an airplane. Next slide. That's an interior side of manufacturing of the DC-3. Next slide. And the nose section of the 3 going on. You can also already tell fuselage have been squashed a little bit so we could get 3 abreast or sometimes 4 abreast seated. Next slide. And there is a tail version of somebody inside working the airplane. Oh, by the way, you know, when getting inside an airplane, especially in fighters and bombers and things like that, there's a problem of the size of people. We employed every small person, I won't call them midgets or something like that, but small person, they came to work for the plant. They were excellent workers and they were more than happy to have the job. Next slide. This is the crowded facilities at Santa Monica in the late 30s making DC-3s. As you can see, there's airplanes and airplane parts literally all over the place. Again, low ceiling, dark wood. I love going out there. This just happened to be Unit 6. As a child, my twin brother, he never worked a day for the company, but we used to go out there and run around between the airplanes and get little pieces of balsa wood, little pieces of veneer. It was a veneer we used on internal panels. It was a 32nd of an inch, 3-ply, and we would use that to make our model airplanes. We also went to the dope shop. Of course, in those days, you actually put on fabric on certain parts of the airplane, and you painted on dope. Next slide. And here, of course, is the cockpit. You can obviously see out here in the field, you know, you notice the radar, you know, and the GPS and the other thing. Of course, they're not there at all. This is the original cockpit, of course, of the DC-3. Next. And this, of course, is an internal one. Of course, I wanted to honor TWA since they basically kicked off the airplane by ordering the DC-2. Next slide. Hello. Next slide. Thank you. And here's a picture in the other direction. In those days, we didn't have people schlepping on board, you know, their suitcase and, you know, their Greyhound bus and everything else that people seemed to drag onto the airplane. Coat racks and hat racks really were coat racks and hat racks, and the things didn't fall on your head, and they also didn't take forever to unload. Next slide, please. This is Dad receiving the Collier Trophy, which was awarded to the company for the DC-2, not the 3, even though it was awarded in 36, but the trophy was dedicated in 1935. Now in some pictures, you'll see between right of my father, a picture of my older brother, Donald Jr. Donald was really upset because he was actually not there. And he got his vice president of public relations, Ben Marble, to fake his picture in. Next slide, please. I'm sorry, he was not there. He was home with us, and I was old enough to listen to his tirade. This, of course, is the production line at Santa Monica. One of the interesting things when you actually look at the pictures, when looking at old aviation pictures, one of the fun things to do is don't look at the airplane. Look at the background. I mean, there's pictures where there's absolutely nothing in the background. Now it's all houses and cars and gas stations, but in those days, there was nothing in the background. And so, like here, you can look in the background. In Santa Monica, there's a whole community behind where it is now. Slide, please. Douglas and the airlines got together before World War II and built an experimental aircraft, a pressurized airplane we call the DC-4E. Now, the DC-4E was a good airplane, but it just was not right for the times. And so we actually sold it in 1938 to the Japanese, as well as signed the Japanese up as a licensee to make DC-3s. Now, if the Japanese would please pay us their license fee, I figure it's about $10 billion with interest.